After 25 years in the fashion industry, I've realized that fashion is not really about the clothes, it's about the people. I'm Laura Van Root Poole, and this is What We Wore. Stephen Campbell creates custom artwork for clients around the world. He's the cover artist of our second annual Dream Book. This episode gives a window into Stephen's unique ability to help others step into their creativity while pursuing his own. I'm so excited to have you here in the studio in person. Welcome to What We Wore.
Thank you. Thank you. This is really terrific.
I had no idea you were actually here in Charlotte. I had no idea. We've been working with you on our dream book, and I didn't know we were talking to you from Charlotte. We should have been doing it. I guess you were doing it in person with Scott.
No. It was just phone call.
And, really?
And actually, like 100% of my work is done through email. I mean, back in the 90s, you had to, even if it was just a little spot for a magazine, you had to go in and meet the editor. And they're talking about this 2x2 spot. And you're like, seriously, am I coming in at
really?
8 in the morning just to talk about this? But that was the, like, so that was the rule. Like, that was this whole,
yeah.
But it was quite nice to be able to, like, you know, form that relationship with someone. So,
well, I want to hear about your whole trajectory. Where are you from?
Grew up in Dallas.
Oh, wow.
And
Shopping town.
I have a mom, a second grade teacher, and she took Aww. A pause when I was growing up and then got back into it eventually. My father had an oil exploration business. So when the price of oil barrels and gas went up, that was good for us. And I have a brother who is a Presbyterian minister. He's 10 years younger. And he really wanted to his dream was to be the third brother in Oasis. So I guess now he's kind of on stage. So it's kind of the same thing.
But also these guys are really like, they fight a lot. I think they hate each other. Do they still speak? I don't know. I mean, they have the most dramatic relationship.
We'd have to call a friend and ask him.
So I think they probably could have used a Presbyterian minister as the third brother. So tell me how did that influence you?
When I think of Texas, I just think of being on my stomach with my elbows on the floor, you know, hands on my chin, watching television in first grade. And I was always watching, like, you know, Sesame Street or Family
Electric Company,
Family Affair. And my dream was plotting, how do I get out of Texas? Because everything was in New York. Sesame Street's in
New
York.
Yeah, it was.
Family Affairs in New York. All I wanted was that walnut double door with the single doorknob in the middle.
Yeah.
And in first grade, I was like, that's what I want.
That's so funny. Had you gone to New York as a
no,
little person?
No, of course not. But I knew everything. That's where everything was going to be happening. And
yeah. Green Acres was really influential to me in that way as well. I don't even think they were ever even in New York. It was just the first.
The opening.
Just the opening. And I was like, New
that, like,
York is where I want to be.
It's that green patio up in the sky. Yeah.
It was so fabulous, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Tell me about your parents and how did they influence your upbringing?
So
did they encourage your flight?
Absolutely. So, you know, for most of my life, most of my childhood, I was kind of an only child. So I was really that age group where my parents went to go play bridge. I brought art materials and I was able to be self-contained and entertain myself and be busy. I think just the one thing I've learned from my family is, like, anything can be made from your hands. You can make any, you can buy it, of course, but you can make it. There's a creative way to figure it out. And I was trying to think with my father, because my father wasn't really into art, but he was like, I'll support you, whatever you want to do. But I had this flashback this morning about being in first grade and Indian guides, which I'm sure it's not called that anymore.
And it was Indian princesses for me.
There you go. And again, it was that, like, handcraft, making these tandy, you know, objects.
Yeah.
And there was a connection with my father. That was pretty great. And then my mom is super creative. She's one of those people that, like, makes the felted pineapple turkey, quilting, always making something, making biscuits at the holidays out of just no ingredients.
Yeah.
And then she does a lot of tatting, which is this micro lace. Do you know what tatting is?
I think so. Tell me.
It's just this, like, microscopic knotting that I'm not able to see what she's doing, but blip, blop, bloop. And she's made this big lacy.
And what's the fabric?
It's just a cotton string on a shuttle. And I know, I have no idea. I'm always like, wait, what are you doing?
I'm going to need to see pictures of that. I think I know what it is.
So she would make these, like, so she's made a set of snowflakes for my Christmas tree, which is just super gorgeous. And they're just, it's just these little knots that all of a sudden becomes something.
And does she know what she's
of course it's becoming? Yeah.
Did she go back to school after you all grew up?
So when after my brother started school, she went back into teaching. So
second grade. Oh. Who was the most influential person in your artistic life growing up?
So hands down, it's my grandmother. Mm-hmm. I had the most magical summers. She lived in the smallest town of Arkansas in this beautiful stone house on the lake, lots of nature. And it was just, you could go explore in the woods and there was a creek so you could build a dam. And our house had like a, I think it was called a dogway or a breezeway in between that would help the air circulation.
Yeah.
And even though it was the summer, the concrete would be so nice and cool. And she had a candle business and she had a studio in the garage. And so after her husband died, that's what she started to do, I guess, you know, to fill her time. And
I mean, like in the 80s?
No, this would have been 70s.
Jeez.
I still have one of her candles today. It's a cheese wheel with a wedge that comes out and it's got these ceramic mice. And no. I've kind of upgraded it into like a cloched marble thing. And it's the chicest thing ever.
Oh my gosh.
So she would work all year round in her garage. And there's lots of like hot, it seems very dangerous to me. There's like hot plates and liquid wax and pouring. And so she would do this all year round. I would come visit and then we'd pile it all up in the back of her. And every year it was a new Chrysler New Yorker, which was like this giant car. And we'd pack up and we would go to these wonderful places, these amusement parks around and different candle. At that time in the 70s, amusement parks had the candle shop and you'd buy a candle. Why you're at the amusement park, I don't know, but it was very popular. And so she would go in and take deliveries and orders of her candles. And I had the bonus of getting then to go like go with her, see all of this, go to an amusement park, be on the road, talk about her life, talk about my life. We were just great buddies.
Aww.
And I think she's just really one of the people I just learned that you could really make anything with your hands.
Tell me more about your creativity. Were you interested in art in school from early on?
I was always the kid that could do art. I would get pulled out of class to like, we had these things called holograms. And it was I would get to like design this little note for someone special that came to the school and I'd get pulled out to color it. I was just the kid that could like draw a Greek column or like, hey, Stephen, can you help me with this? So I was that kid.
Yeah.
And it was just, I just had the confidence just to do it and keep doing it, I think.
Into high school. And then when you were thinking about college, was it about art?
Growing up with art, you're really good at it. But then it becomes that period of what are you going to do with your life and your career? And it's like, oh, you can't make any money in art. So, and it's this really like, it's this really stop sign of like, but wait, I thought this was, wait, you know, I need a map here. What's happening?
Yeah.
So that struggle, you know, was a little challenging in terms of like figuring it out. I went to school and college for like graphic design and packaging because I was just obsessed with like packaging for everything and noticing like how the type went over the box and all that kind of stuff.
What did your family encourage you? I mean, they were good.
Absolutely. Yeah. They were just like, if this is what you want to do. I knew, you know, in the 80s, it was all about getting an MBA. And I remember like in that kind of like awkward moment, like, okay, I'll go with my friends and I'll go interview at Baylor University and interview at the business school. And I misspelled business. And my mother said, I don't think you really want to be here. And I was like, no. And we left.
That is hilarious.
And I say that with complete blush and embarrassment, but I think it's really important to there's a point in when you're younger that you kind of just, well, I'm supposed to be doing this.
Yeah.
And I have to do this because these are the people that are important in my life who are telling me this. But then, you know, when you're older, you're like, nah, I like green better. And I think growing up, there just wasn't the exposure that I saw on TV or in media that I knew, well, someone's doing this. And how do I have to get there to be able to do it. Because, you know, my parents were very sweet. They'd take me to a community college for a drawing class. And I'm with all these, like, you know, 20-year-olds. And it was just, I mean, so they really did the best they could to kind of help me along. And
there really is no roadmap to be an artist. You know, I mean, I think that it probably is incredibly curvy, because you especially, I mean, I think you started in something different than what you do now, correct?
Correct.
Tell me what you did next. You studied graphic design.
Yep. So, and completely just flunked out, like cartoon kick on the butt, skid on the ground. I couldn't mix acrylic paints.
Acrylic sucks though.
I would make big meringue balls of like the wrong color, and I would keep adding, and I keep thinking like, oh my gosh, I bothered. It's like $17 a tube,
yeah,
right? It's
just
like,
I remember the art store like, was so expensive.
It was so much fun to go pay, you know, to go shopping. It was like, luckily my parents were able to you know, help out with that, but it was just so expensive. I just kept thinking like, oh my gosh, there's $12.
Hopefully it wasn't,
and it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. It's like,
hopefully it wasn't cobalt.
So I just kept making, I just couldn't mix acrylic color. But now with the computer, I can see color in my brain.
Yeah.
I just didn't know how to mix it.
It was more the math of it you didn't understand, maybe.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, there's no kind of like, here's how you do it. It's just, and everyone's like, everyone around me is like, you know, like going to grayscales. And I'm like, what's happening? You know, what's happening?
Yeah.
And then also another class that I got a proud F in was was lettering. And it was this antiquity, like this old-fashioned metal pen with a jug of black India ink.
Whoa.
And you kind of had to balance it. And it was this, and it was on a rule. And we had to do like the Saks Fifth Avenue type.
Wow.
And that's all about precision.
That's insane.
And precision. And for me, I like my line just to be a little like wiggly, wonky, you know, not
yours.
So my line.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just wasn't fitting in. And everyone else is like, and so I was just like, this just isn't for me. So I jumped over to, I finished with art history and child psychology. And loved it. And so everything, everything kind of just pulled together in the end. And my goal in college was then to go to grad school to become an art therapist.
Oh, wow.
Which I...
And how did you know about that? And how did you even know what that was?
By a chance of a friend who was going to be going, but then she got married and her life changed and she didn't go. So I went to the College of New Rochelle, went to a grad school program for art therapy, and did an internship at Bellevue Hospital. So for me, I was working in Bellevue Hospital in pediatrics with medically ill children.
Jeez.
And
talk about like jumping
in. And you think of just the psychiatry services at Bellevue, but Bellevue is also a medical hospital where families are bringing their child for surgery, trauma, chronic illness, all that stuff, right?
Wow.
So for me, I just saw this like, oh, this is a great way to get a patient to talk about what's going on for them. So part of my job was this kind of validation and really listening and hearing and having a conversation about a child's changes to their body, and art can be a way to express that. And then also I had this terrific ability to have just art groups in the afternoon. And it was, you know, a kid would come in like, I want to make a mermaid dragon. And I was like, let's figure it out. And so it was just, that was just 100% in my lane. I knew how to like, we can do this.
How incredible.
So.
And did you know, I mean, you loved it. I mean, you were in your element and this is what you wanted to do. Was there, were you,
I just felt like this, you know, I felt really good. I felt like this is everything coming together.
And how long did you do that?
Actually, just until we moved here to Charlotte.
Oh, wow.
So I've been in different places.
And so were you making art on your own as well? Like, when did you start to dabble back in that?
I just always was making art, you know, at home. And then,
what was your medium?
Probably just Sharpie, sketchbook, drawing people around New York, my neighborhood.
Huh.
And then at the hospital, I had an opportunity to apply for a grant I had this crazy idea to get Adobe Illustrator and a Mac computer, and it was brand new.
Yeah.
And I got the grant.
God, you remember how crazy that was when it first came out?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, it's even crazy when you don't know how to use it.
Right, exactly.
So I was like, oh my gosh, I got the grant. So now I have to figure out in 30 days how to use it before I have to tell the donor, like, this is amazing. You won't believe what's happening. You've got to come see this. I had no idea. I had no idea. So for the next 30 days, I would come home at night, walk the dog, And then I would practice drawing with the mouse.
Wow.
And I found out years later, Stephen, you're not supposed to draw with the mouse. You're supposed to draw with like a tablet and this thing. But again, the mouse gave me this wiggly, wonky line. That's my language.
Yeah.
And so there's a bit of it's like, you know, you can't really contain it. So I work with that kind of flow, that ebb and flow of the line, which I like. So I got the grant. So I learned how to do that. And my husband, Howard, is like, there's kind of something happening here. And I was like, I know. It's very exciting. I like this. I was finally like able to put color that I could see in my brain. And you know, if I saw a woman in the East Village walking a pig, I could like, I could match that pink on the computer of the pig in the drawing. So he's like, you know, keep going. And I was like, but I want to like figure out how do I become an illustrator? I, you know, I kept seeing all these like Wallpaper Magazine, all the illustrations went back to art department illustration division.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, you know, let's keep going. Do 30 more drawings. So I got to a point where I put a portfolio together and felt really good about it.
And these were Sharpie or these were on
this
the
This is on the computer. So I'm okay. Drawing with the mouse.
Yeah.
And I put a proper portfolio together, went down to Soho on Green Street before work, just a cold drop off. Elevator opens. It's just a kind of an industrial loft, white space with just a desk at the end of the hall with some young person that could care less that I was there, but I'm so excited. And so I kind of like make this drop of my portfolio and I think I'm never going to see this again and just kind of walk backwards and get on the elevator and
don't turn,
go back to work. Well, I got back to work and Stephanie Pesikoff calls me and she's like, who are you? Get back here. And I mean, it's just one of those like great New York stories.
Yeah.
I'm just so appreciative that it just doesn't happen every day because everyone and their mother is an illustrator now.
Right.
And I've been with Stephanie this whole time. And that next week I just started working.
Okay. So just started working and they were fashion illustrations for magazines?
Editorial, advertising, fashion. You know, little unknown people that then eventually became big famous people that I got to grow with, which was exciting as a for clients.
And always in this medium again. Sorry,
always drawing in Adobe Illustrator, which is
So how did you? So did you take photographs? Like, how did you?
No, it's just so from memory? You know what size paper do you want? And right. Then you just draw with the mouse, and right. Then I can change the line thickness and color. And that's all I'm doing. I'm not doing all the bells and whistles. It's literally just drawing with like Sharpies.
And is that what you still do?
Absolutely.
Really? That's so...
I tried the tablet and the pen, but it just didn't work for me. And I found myself working super hard at the hospital from 9 to 5, come home, walk the dog. And then I was doing these amazing assignments from 5 o'clock to midnight. And I knew if I left either job, someone would get my slot in the stable. And I was like, I'm not leaving either one of these places. This is just, but then it became just a lot. But it was like when you're younger, it's like, I can do everything. And I did. And it was fun. So
tell me a little more about Howard. It sounds like Howard has really been transformative in your career. How did y'all meet?
We met at a friend's fashion show. We were sitting across the runway, which is very 90s. And so we didn't know each other. We're there at the show and we had mutual friends and we kept saying, hey, yeah, I kind of like Howard. And he's like, hey, I kind of like, and just, they were just clueless. And it just took forever. I was like, finally, it was like, okay, I need to invite Howard out. And so I would messenger him things. In New York back then, you could messenger like for $9, you could messenger anything on a bike messenger. We met, I think at Bryant Park in the movies. And then I was like, hey, let's, you know, I'm going to go to Texas. When I get back, I'll call you. Let's go out. So when I got back, I sent him a big gulp from 7-Eleven and I put a little note on the bottom of the straw inside and we'd messenger that up to him. So he was, at that time, he was working at El Decor and it was always like, Howard, you've got another delivery.
Another big gulp.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's funny. I feel really lucky. You know, at the time I was in New York and it's like, got a great job. I was happy then. I had an apartment in Chelsea, and I could walk by the Barney's window on my way to work, and that was enough. And then I met Howard, that was enough. And then it just, so yeah. just life just kind of like has just been, that's enough, and I love everything about it. And then something else comes in, which is kind of great.
What was your first really exciting client or project at this early stage?
I got such inspiration from the tweens, the adolescents and teenagers at Bellevue. They had such great style. And I remember it just being so amazed because they were just like different from the kids I grew up with. Yeah. And they didn't know how to ride a bike because they're in the city. They're not at Central Park because it's too expensive to get on the subway and go. So right. their whole world is just completely different and inspiring to me. So I had a campaign for Claire's, the store where where you get your ears pierced.
Really well.
There you go. So it was the whole wrap around everything in the around the store. And it was, I think it was 44 drawings.
Wow. And you had to go to a Claire's, you hadn't been to a Claire's before, I imagine.
No.
So did you go and just hang out and watch girls come in? And
no, I actually just, I went to the Woolworths building and met with the people that, you know, when they were in their corporate offices. And And then I was able to just really draw all these different types of young girls. And
which you knew from your work.
Which I knew.
And, that's so interesting.
And just, you know, and back then too, when I did a lot of work for like, like Vogue Girl and all these types of like girl magazines. And I'd always say, hey, does the girl have to be white? Can she be this or that? And they'd say, hey, let me check. And they'd come back, they're like, absolutely.
Can you imagine that now?
Well, but it was just like, back then in the 90s, because I was like, you know, and I would hear the girls say, and this is going to sound hilarious, but that was the time when Mariah Carey was on, you know, kind of like talking about like, I'm not white, I'm not black, I'm not this. And so I would hear that in conversation with the girls that are in my that I'm working with.
Sure.
And so I knew how important that was to look like this, but I've also got freckles, but I'm also this, but my hair is this, you know? So it was just,
interesting.
It was really super inspiring.
What was your most challenging project at that time?
Everything was just, everything just always worked. Like I never, I had one client that I just couldn't get the lips. I think I gave 5 pairs of lips and it just, and I'm like, listen, after the 5th pair, you need to hire someone else because I don't know what to do. Like, and I know this is like your vibe, you know, the lips are your vibe, but it was just like.
Was it like a lipstick company?
But it was just a situation where I was like kind of reframed at that. I'm not the person for you. And so many people to choose.
Yeah.
And I want you to be happy with what you're. What you want, right? I mean,
I tell that to the girls all the time at the store. I'm like, you know, we're actually not the store for every person, and that's okay.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
But it's hard to, you. I think you want to please everybody at certain times in your life, I guess, or maybe when you're younger. But it's okay that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
What was the fashion illustration community like at that time? Did you have friends that were doing it? Did you know other people doing it?
I didn't. And it, I mean, my world was 9 to 5 in a hospital.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it was just being able to step in to provide an arena for someone else to be creative. And then I'd get off work, walk the dog, and then I could step into my arena and be creative. So it was a real balance of being able to be creative in different ways, which was refreshing in both you know, at home or at work. I didn't have anyone that was doing, you know, doing this.
You didn't have a mentor or somebody that you could, a career you could follow.
No, but my husband Howard is always the one. I'm always like, hey, can I talk to you about this? And we're really good about kind of like volleying about an idea.
And probably nice that he's sort of in your business, but not, but not in your business. I think that really helps too, for perspective. So tell me about 9/11. It sounds like that is where things changed a little bit in your career.
You know, in the 90s, we all had, as an illustrator, you had to have a cell phone then because you were getting, I couldn't use my work phone. And I had 30 minutes to decide if I wanted a job or not to accept it.
Yeah.
So Shanghai Tang wants you to do this. You've got 30 minutes. And if you don't want it, it's going to go to the next person.
Wow.
So I was always like, first ring, yes. And then after 9/11, everything just stopped.
Stopped because brands were worried about what would happen next.
So one of my clients, Liz Lang Maternity,
right,
had a maternity fashion show that morning. Everything just kind of stopped. And it was like, go shopping. That'll help.
Right.
And then illustration quickly kind of became this British, I don't know what, dirty, scratchy, staticky, dark, gritty, ashy, which was, if you think it's now, it's like, oh, of course it was.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're like, we're feeling as a world.
Yeah.
And I just knew that wasn't for me. And then also creatives were also using like really just bad stock illustrations. Like stock illustration was becoming a thing. The bad thing about that is you don't own the copyright to it. And it could be, if you submit stock illustration, you know, a cigarette company could use your work and maybe you don't want to have that happening.
Right.
So anyway, so I just turned around from it all and just started to do drawings on fabric and stitch. And to me, it just seemed like a natural left turn, right turn.
Had you ever stitched anything before?
Absolutely. I mean, well, not what I do now,
right,
but always just like I could make something or we could, you know, just that whole thing of it wasn't impossible to kind of figure it out.
Yeah, it wasn't
so
like
I just kind of self-taught myself embroidery.
Interesting. Were you still doing art therapy?
Not at that time. After 9/11, my husband and I were just like, let's just get out of the city. This is enough.
Yeah.
And we were also kind of tired of just doing those walks to the West Side Highway. And how many times can we walk? It's like the same, you know, just,
yeah,
it's such a small town.
Yeah.
It's a small town, which is lovely.
Yeah.
But we were ready developmentally for something else. So he had gotten a job to launch Cottage Living Magazine.
Oh, wow.
And we moved to Birmingham kind of.
And where is he from? Is Howard from?
He's from New York.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Born in Brooklyn.
Oh, wow.
And grew up in Merrick.
So this was a big change.
Yeah.
So what was that like?
We met a lot of great people.
Great
restaurants. His job was great. I ran into a lot of problems trying to be an art therapist. The company that he was working for was really supportive for us as a gay couple. And back then, when we weren't married, we were domestic partners, but getting insurance was no problem.
Wow.
And that was just all, we were just so appreciative for all of that.
Huh.
But then when I tried to get a job as an art therapist, lots of walls.
Really?
You know, who's your mama? What does your wife do? All that kind of stuff, which, you know, can happen.
I've never heard of that before.
Which can happen in any part of the world.
It happens in the South.
But I think for me, I was on the top of my game and thinking like, oh, I can like totally just recreate this in Birmingham, but it didn't work. And we eventually went back to New York and then he got a job to be creative director for Southern Living. So we came back to Birmingham and I knew if we go back to Birmingham, I'm not doing the art therapy road.
Right.
But it was always doing illustration during all these moves. And then we moved to Milwaukee on Lake Michigan where it's quite chilly.
And is that Target? No.
Taste of Home magazine.
Okay, sorry.
And so we were in Milwaukee. I was working at the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin as an art therapist in pediatrics and also with mothers in the NICU who have just given birth to a baby. And art was a really great way to reconnect mother and baby, especially if there's something like not 100% going on great for your baby. There was a lot of like, I'm kind of nervous about holding this baby. So art was kind of a way to kind of work on that icky, but I'm supposed to, you know, want to be holding this baby. So.
Oh, how interesting. And then to Charlotte?
And then to Charlotte, which I love.
Oh, and how long have y'all been?
So we've been here since 2018.
Okay. And how'd you choose Charlotte or did it choose you?
For a job.
Okay.
So Howard's working for a bank here.
Okay.
As a creative. And we were on with a realtor looking at places to rent, and we found one of these like high rises with a view of everything, and we put everything in storage to live in this high rise, and that became old after a while because in a high rise you have fire drills at 3 a.m. and when you have a dog, that's not so fun.
And do you have your same dog from before that you walked all the time?
No, let's see. We've had Bertrand, Jean-Luc, and now we have Etienne.
I love all French dogs. I love it. Are they all the same
They're all Wheaton Terriers.
Oh, how sweet.
So.
Oh, I love that.
I would easily, we would easily have 7 if we could.
So
tell me a little bit about working on the dream book and how that went and how that happened.
Well, Scott's always, you know, I knew Scott, I didn't know Scott in person from New York, but we were connected on Facebook and you have those Facebook friends. Then it wasn't until moving to Charlotte that I was like, hey, come over for dinner. We'll watch Mademoiselle and, you know, we'll hang out. So since then, Scott's always been thinking like, I've got to think of a way to like collaborate with Stephen. And it just over the years, he would call me like, and it just never worked. And this finally just was an opportunity to kind of green light.
Is that how you typically work, the way Scott is our creative director of the Dream Book? And I know Scott came to you and said, we want to do 3 or 4 scenes of the stores during Christmas. And then do you, like, how does that actually work?
So there's a basic structure. And I'm at the age now and experience to say, you tell me what you need. What are your requirements? What's the size?
Yeah.
Is there anything you have to see? And then I provide a sketch around that creative brief.
Yeah. And do you prefer this now, embroidery, or do you still do your mouse?
I do both, but yeah. I just love the imperfections yeah. of embroidery. And I think for me, like, I'm not doing all the bells and whistles that you see on Instagram. And, you know, it's really about the line drawing.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's just how do you, this drawing on fabric and then putting this fabric line over it. That is, to me, a very kind of a Sharpie line, which mm-hmm. I really like.
Stephen, will you walk me through the process of how your embroideries take shape? I mean, how do you start?
And it's the same process if I was an illustrator using paint or drawing on the computer. It's basically the client comes to the agency, we have a need, here's a way to see my work to see if we're a good match.
Yep.
And it's funny, some clients will say, but I don't see a cat in your portfolio. Can you draw cats? Guess what? I can draw a cat.
You saw a monkey, didn't you?
So it's kind of that, you know, or the client will just come and say, oh, we want Stephen for this.
Yeah.
So then there's kind of a creative brief about what they need, how many they need, what's the due date, kind of what's the usage. Are you using this? It's kind of like renting a car.
Yeah.
Do you just need this for a short period of time? Do you want to buy and own it and do all kinds of things with it for eternity? So there's a creative brief, usually an email. This is what we need. There might be a chat on the phone. And then I send back a Sharpie sketch, just quick.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, there might be some revisions of just what's in, oh, we really want to see a shopping bag. We really want to see a different pose or a different angle. So the Sharpie sketch is just a way to kind of visually communicate and notate what I think you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of land up and then I do a proper really like an architect's plan of like, this is what you're going to see as a stitch.
Right.
And there's no surprise with it. It's what you see is what you're going to get. You know, I think for some illustrators, it's like, I've seen sketches. I'm like, how does the client even know what they're going to get in the end? Because this has no relationship. And there's also conversations about color.
I was going to say, is the Sharpie sketch in black or how?
It's in black. Okay. And then, so it's really about getting the sketch approved and then color.
Right.
And I found with color, you really have to be selective and really, and I feel that's the part I love is like, how do we have color run through something?
Yeah.
So that all the illustrations make sense and communicate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or what's that one color that's my brand color that can just pop and your eye goes to throughout each one. And then from there, I draw the drawing on fabric, iron it, put on a hoop.
So this isn't you. So you're never on your mouse. And
so I'm sorry. So I'm. I think you, good question.
Yeah.
I still do my old school drawing days on the computer with the mouse.
With the color, probably.
Probably at first it's just black, and then so I go from the Sharpie sketch,
right?
Then to drawing on the computer to kind of tighten it up a bit.
Yeah, I figured you'd need that. Your brain would need that.
And that just helps me then to. It just feels
figures
right.
Out the hand.
It just feels right.
Yeah,
drawing with the mouse. And then drawing on fabric, put it on a hoop. I think for our work, it was 11 by 17 was kind of the size. The catalog's smaller.
Right.
Page size is smaller, but that was kind of the size I'm working at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might involve going to the fabric store, which I love going to a fabric store. If anyone, the man or woman that's cutting the fabric has a smock, I think that's those.
I was gonna say, what's your favorite fabric store?
Joann's.
Oh, Joann's, obviously.
Because that's all that's left.
Yeah, I know,
that's,
I know.
But they, you know, they have really just like, your fabric doesn't have to be expensive. And there's times when the fabric needs to be from a special place in London that's about the quality, or it's the client's fabric, or it's the client's sweater or coat that we're, you know, the same kind of fabric. So there's a discussion about fabric, color, sketch approval, and then moving into drawing the drawing on fabric, put it on a hoop, and then stitching.
Do you use only one kind of thread, or do
of course it's, it has to be it has to be DMC, which is a French embroidery floss.
Where do you get still that? Made.
You can get that at Michael's or Joann's, and it's important that it's 100% cotton, because if it's not, the threads kind of don't hold together. They just wiggle too much and it's a mess. For me, it's just basically the stitch. And every time you see it's up and down, and then not, and then start again. And I find it's really important to, this is just my thing, everyone stitches, has their own kind of stitch handwriting or signature. So I think it's important to say, like, I'm just going to go right.
Right.
The whole time makes a difference than going right, than going on the lines, go right, and then going left.
Yeah.
It kind of like makes everything more intentional and directional. And eventually you just kind of, it just becomes a natural thing that you don't really think about.
I love that. I'm a freelance embroiderer. I love it. And I don't do the drawings. I just sort of start stitching. They're not great, but if there's something so, I love it. And I'm a painting major, but something about the color and the fabric and
I think it's just that there's a physicality of the needle and the thread, and then it's interesting. My needles over time will start to bend at the top
because you've been going right.
Because I've I mean, you think like it's a metal, but I finished up and I'm like, wow, you know. But there's a little slight bend, and I have a favorite needle, of course.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that's really important also too is, like, even if there's a fire, put that needle on your fabric before you leave the table.
Yes.
Because you don't want to step on it. It happens, right? I mean, so that's rule number one.
I love it.
So work gets finished. And I think with stitching, I can change the line if it's thick or thin. I'm not really one of those types that fill in. Because, again, it's just about the drawing for me. And I can get other – and it's about – you know, in my drawings, it's really about the details. And it's like those details of, like, making you want to look a couple more times and come back to it.
Yeah.
So the piece gets finished. Trim it, iron just around it. Never iron over your embroidery or you'll flatten all your work for eternity and you'll be really disappointed.
Okay. You know from experience, obviously.
And then my work gets scanned and sent to the client as a JPEG. So, I mean, so really for all of my work, it's email, scan. Sometimes, you know, and then there are times when the client does want to have, has a need for the physical thing, or they're going to photograph it, or it's going to be used in different ways. But there's just something magical about being able to send something, the technology of being able to create something and then send it through this magic box that arrives. And then I can't wait to see things printed.
Ours printed so beautifully. It looks like the pages are embroidered. It is so beautiful.
I just can't wait to see. And then to see what's in it and see how the whole thing looks.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that's just a part of the excitement for me, is to be able to see it all put together. Because it's not about just my piece. It's about this.
Yeah.
It's about a book and it's about this dream.
They're just spectacular. I mean, I think they're so beautiful. They're so much better than we could have ever imagined them.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, they're really special. So thank you for that.
And I think for me, when I work, I have this, you know, not to sound too like ooh, but I kind of like see the end product. Like I really know that it's going to have this color, and I'm really into like having this balance and pop of color, and I just kind of know where I'm going before I've started.
You're such a talented artist, and we're so pleased to have collaborated with you on this.
Thank you. And I think it's important too that, you know, if I didn't have any success at all, I would still be doing this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm up at 7:30, draw like 7:30 to 1 is my zone. So at 7:30, I'm green light on something creative. And I think you just have to, you know, so many people in New York are like, I want to be a photographer. I want to be doing fashion. Well, go do it already. Like, waiting for? Yeah. You know, I would say that in the 90s, I'm like, go do it.
Yeah.
Just start doing it.
It's amazing that you did it while you did other like really big things, you know, at the same time. I think that is amazing.
You just have to start.
I think you had proms in Texas.
Yes, we did. We had winter girls dances and all this.
Tell me, I have to hear what you wore to your favorite prom, or if you wore or
so,
your favorite look.
So in Texas, you own a tuxedo because you go to stuff.
So many things.
But then for me, we had a great store called Caldwell and Son on Hillcrest, right across from SMU.
Okay.
And it was children's shop, barbershop, women's shop, men's shop, and grooming, and
it was just
a one stop, and had been there forever, and a tux shop. Uh-huh. So that's where you went for your tux. And then for me, I was all about Madras growing up.
Oh, yeah.
and the ones that would bleed from India, that not this newfangled Madras stuff, but like the real, like you had to like wash it in salt water and all this stuff in the beginning. And so I had a cummerbund and bow tie sets that were Madras.
Yeah.
That was my way to like of self-expression to kind of add some punch of color to that.
And do you remember socks or?
Oh, opera. We all had opera pumps from Brooks Brothers because why wouldn't you? And then I went to prom with my childhood friend Carol across the street. Uh-huh. And as a family, it was one of those families, we were kind of connected, making ice cream in the summer, swimming. We would do happy days, plays for our parents. And so the best part is we would go to the swimming pool and like dunk our heads and then give ourselves the duck.
I can't remember what it's called.
The greaser.
Yes.
Look before we ran into our lines. And it was just, that's hilarious. So anyway, it was just really great.
Do you know what she wore?
Absolutely. So big, huge sleeves off the shoulder, kind of a tealy blue taffeta, tight waist, and then just these like big massive shoulder pieces of armor.
No pun intended.
And she had a bob haircut.
Love it.
Yeah.
Oh, love it. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drazda. QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.